Hello and welcome to the Dancers Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Donahue, and we have an incredibly special guest, both because I'm excited to have this guest on because I enjoy their music and their work, but also because they're a good friend of mine that I hadn't talked to in a while. They're Dorian Electra, a queer hyper pop sensation. I did not listen to queer hyper pop until I met Dorian because I was their personal trainer for quite a while, and I prepared them for a few of the music videos that they did for their last album, and it was just, as soon as I met them, because we spent a lot of time together. When you're personal training somebody, it's just you and them, and you're essentially just talking for an hour, and that doesn't work unless you have good rapport with the person, and we had great rapport, and we would have such fun conversations. At the end of the sessions, I would be like, I can't believe I'm getting paid for this, because Dorian's just so fun to talk to, is so funny, silly, but also very serious about their career, and we get into all that. It's one of the best conversations, period, that I've ever had, honestly. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please check out Dorian, check out their album Fanfare and their social media. And if you like the podcast, please subscribe to the YouTube. We have a lot more videos and episodes coming. There's also an extra portion that I throw on the Patreon. So if you want to see the Patreon, the link to that is below. But without further ado, please enjoy my episode with Dorian Electra.
No. Your dress? Shannon Blake.
What's that?
My queen.
Is that is that her? Oh, I was just looking at.
With her.
Yeah, is she sick?
Yeah, she's amazing. She has one thing where she's like, I don't remember what she's like talking about healing a kidney infection with.
Yeah,
positive
with
vibes.
Positive vibes. Wait. Let's run that back. Oh, so the mic goes right about there.
Hey. Yeah. Meaning? Oh yeah. You mean just like hold it right about here?
Here.
Okay, it's cool.
Amazing. Hell yes. I mean, I have to say, let me say this about the style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever you have to say about it, it is definitely a whole concise thing.
Absolutely.
She bought into it.
I just really respect her for living her truth and her lifestyle.
Do you really think that? Are you, now, this
I really
is,
do.
This is
I love you, Shannon. I really do. Queen, if you're listening, Queen,
Shannon,
please.
Come on the pod, please.
Please
come
no,
on the
all of
podcast.
My friends are obsessed with Shannon. I mean, I just think that, you know, she gets a lot of hate. And anyone that gets a lot of hate, you know, for being themselves, you have to, like, you have to look at them. I look at them in some kind of heroic way.
There is something.
Well, not
beautiful.
Everybody.
Yeah,
no. There are some people. I won't name names.
We don't want to co sign here. But the thing about her, this is, and this is why I would love to get her on the podcast. The skin is almost too good.
Her skin.
Because I've met, and between you and me, I've dated a couple of people like this.
Listen, I do.
And they don't. They don't throw what they do put on their skin does not help it.
I see, like some natural remedies that are actually causing like allergic rashes and things.
Although the tattoos have to be real. So
now, what would you call? You said the queen. What would you call? Because you said you know dated a few people in this vibe. What would you call this vibe?
That's a great. I would say it's definitely Burning Man chic, circa. Mm. 2010,
before some of the cultural appropriation things came into conversation,
before the cult, yeah, I would say the white dreadlocks make me feel 2010, right at the peak. There's been a few peaks of like cultural appropriation where the whites just kind of ran a little rampant.
Absolutely, the Iggy Azalea era.
Iggy Azalea, yeah. Like 2010, it was like comedians were just letting in context N-words fly and white dreads peaked out.
Wow.
Yeah. That's 2010 to me.
Yeah.
So this that's what I feel from her, like Burning Man chic.
Yeah, there is sort of like a like naivete that people are almost maybe craving a return to after like the post-woke era.
Yeah.
You know, where they're sort of like, I'm not saying that I'm craving this necessarily, I'm just saying, and just to comment on the culture, you know, that maybe people, I don't know what people are really thinking, actually. I think that there's actually a lot of, I don't know what the, I mean, she's doing shows and things. I'd like to like to go check that out, Shannon.
You should hop on. You're dressed so cool. This is so funny. I wanted to get into this early on the podcast. I have experienced, because when we meet people, they all experience us in a certain light. Like comics see me usually out at shows at night, whereas like people I work out with see me during the day.
Oh, true. You've probably never seen me in regular clothes.
I've almost never seen you dressed the way you usually dress.
That's very true.
Almost exclusively in your own merch t-shirts working out. Because I'm going to say this in the preamble, but just to reiterate, I was Dorian's personal trainer.
Yeah, which is iconic. I was like, more than anybody, like Dan has seen so many sides of me that
you of me. It would even as far, because I feel like personal trainer client relationship is, and the reason why it gets finicky for some people is because it is like a very intense, very sort of like you're in the pocket with somebody and they're like, you know, breaking down what you're doing with your body. And there's a bunch of, especially if you're getting deep with it, like with exercise, there's patterns and emotions that'll come out.
Yeah,
and stuff like
when
that.
You're pushing somebody past their point, you know, doing cardio where I'm like, I'm feeling anxiety like coming over my body, you're trying to talk me down from that. You know, it's funny because even coming to this, I was like, in my head it was like more like I'm going to therapy was like the subconscious part of my mind. I don't know, because I was like, it's Dan, but we're gonna be just talking.
Yeah, we're just gonna be talking. Yeah you don't have to
just
do squats
funny.
Or anything.
Oh, thank God, because I've been off of that for a while.
Yeah,
so, no,
nothing wrong with it, because you've been touring and stuff.
I've been touring, yeah. That's and like, I feel like my body's just been like ache, like I don't know, just like the recovery of that. It's like the psychological. Like I was just, I'm like, tomorrow I'm gonna start getting back on it, but you know, yeah.
Where have your travels taken you recently? I know that you were you doing some stuff in South America.
I was like, I did South America, then I did Europe. And then I did North America, and like I played in Mexico for the first time, and then I'm going back to Europe for a little bit next month.
What's it been like? Because this is the post fanfare tour, right?
Yeah.
So what have you seen like any marked change in the audiences, or has it played pretty steadily throughout?
I think it's been amazing. Like some of the shows, you know, like bigger venues and like growing steadily and stuff, but a lot of it is like people coming back from like the last tour I did 2 years ago, some familiar faces, some new people. Actually, I thought of something, but maybe I don't need to say it on the thing.
Go ahead. Let it rip.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say this, but anyway, so some fans, I do meet and greets, and sometimes, you know, they give me gifts and things like that. Sure. And a lot of times I always take them, and I always like, oh, I'm going to look at this later, especially if it's like a note. I love to read it, but I might save it for later. So at the very beginning of the North American tour, I got a little package and had like a note inside. I didn't read it. Fast forward about a month and a half later, I'm finally back home. I've been across like the Canadian border. I've been across Mexico border, etc. I open this package and I come to find out that it says, here's a gift for you, Dorian. 7 tabs of LSD, you know, 4 things of 2CB, and something else in there, and I can't even remember the sequence of letters or numbers, but I'm like, oh my God, not me bringing this across international borders.
That was you going across international borders.
Shannon, when she says, I took a little bit of acid, a little bit of shrooms. Anyway, that was accidentally me across. I mean, it's actually really normal for like rock bands and people to take a bunch of drugs across the border. It's actually not that normal. It is that normal. It's more just unknowingly, and then being learning after the fact. I was like, oh, okie dokie.
It's also, you don't want it to be sprung on you, first of all. That's one thing. You don't want it to be sprung on you that you're doing a felony. But the second thing for me personally is people have such wildly different thresholds when it comes to bringing stuff through the airport. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's like
a traveling person, because like I go on the road with like certain comics, and most of them are just like, oh yeah, when we go to the spot, I'll get whatever my vice is. But then some of them are just like, I'll just put it on. I had a friend who's like very, not Shannon Blake, but had a kind of a Shannon Blake-esque following.
Love.
And one of her fans gave her like a bunch of mushrooms, just like a satchel. Mushrooms usually come in a satchel, I find.
They
like
be coming in satchels, let's be honest.
Or a bundle. But yeah, she got like a satchel of mushrooms. And I was like, oh, what are you going to do? Like, do we have to do these tonight? She's like, oh, I'm going to put it in the check on. I was like, what the Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
I'm not like that.
I'm not like that. I get, you know, and weirdly, I always get, like, or, like, the past couple of times when I was traveling from, like, Mexico, South America, I got, like, extremely searched. Like,
yeah.
They're going through, like, tiny zippers that I didn't even know were on the bag.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's, like, to me, I'm just, like, it's just not worth the anxiety for me.
If you're coming through the airport, if I'm a TSA agent and Dorian Electra is coming through the airport, I'm searching everything.
I'm getting searched down. I'm giving searchable.
I'm gonna get in the dog. I'm getting other animals over there. You're getting searched by a pigeon.
Yeah.
I need the whole spectrum of search.
I know.
Put down on
no,
you.
That I'm giving that. I'm definitely giving that.
But yeah, no, I
smuggler's energy.
I felt the same way because especially towards the end, like you want to tell this story.
Wait, which one?
What do you remember? Maybe this didn't stick out to you as being as crazy as I. Well, first of all, you had to bring me to the hospital one time.
Oh my God! Yes, I was actually just thinking about that on the drive over. Poor Dan. It was like we were like, I don't know who's showing you. You're showing us something with weights.
Well, I had messed my back. That was when I was being an idiot when it came to kickboxing. You just do it too much, and I just like I messed my back up in this way where I was just like, I think everybody has a moment when they shift into like, oh, I'm closer to 30 than 20 now.
Mm-hmm.
That was the moment it happened to me.
Yeah.
Because I picked up like a 5-pound weight. Yes. And I guess I had already messed my back up in this way where I picked it up and I was like, oh. And then
you're like, I can't. Like, I need a chair. And you the thing is, you kept trying to be like, I'm good. I'm good. Like, let's keep it going. And then I'm like, I'm taking you to the hospital.
Right, yeah, which I'm so glad that because I was really trying to keep it like professional and I was like, "Oh God, like please don't think you don't want to have to be bringing your personal trainer to the hospital for a back." It's like, what does that say about me and my services that I'm bringing? It's like if your therapist has to get 5150 in the middle of your session.
That is true. That's iconic though.
It doesn't bode.
But you know what? It made me very when you're like, I'm like, now why? You're like, we're doing these exercises for injury prevention. I'm
right.
taking it seriously
right.
because I've seen the dark
right.
side,
seen the evil side.
Yeah.
But yeah. So and then I had to go to a downtown hospital where
they had the security. Speaking of security, remember?
Yeah.
But is that kind of normal nowadays?
I mean, what the vibe I got from that hospital, which makes perfect sense, is they thought I was scamming them for pills because I think back.
Yeah.
I should have just said it was something else because I think back spasm.
Yeah.
Is such a like I'm trying to get pills kind of code word, but luckily like two doctors came through and both of them were like, oh, he's definitely scamming. And then one really nice
he's definitely scamming.
Yeah they were very apprehensive to give me anything for it. They were just like, and then like one guy, the only guy to put his hands on me, like put his hand on my back, he was like, oh yeah, your back is like as locked up as I've ever felt. Give this guy,
oh wow,
like whatever,
he could actually feel it.
Yeah
dang.
And then the second one the second like too intimate for a personal trainer story is when we were FaceTiming. Do you remember
which time?
I had just broken up with my then
girlfriend. Oh, yes. And you were like in the car
let me tell you about that on my end. So,
okay.
So I was like trying to keep it together, but we were at this point in this breakup where it's like one of the most cordial, like we're still cool breakup I ever had, but it was like my first big boy, like adult 2-year relationship breakup. So it was that point where like you're meeting up with each other, but like to discuss at the table, like these are the whatever terms and conditions of the breakup. And so I had just come back from one of those and I was like, oh, I have to train Dorian. So I was like, okay, get it together. You're going to be fine. And I felt really solid. And then as soon as like you were like, hey, Dan, how are you? And I was like, oh, I'm good. Well, I was just over at my girlfriend's.
Oh, I remember that. I'll never forget that. But, you know, I feel like that really brought us closer together. Also, I probably really asked you in, like, kind of a probing way. Not, like, to be on purpose probing, but do you know what I mean?
Sure.
I was genuinely like, that's fucking a lot. And I remember, I think it was at the same time where you were like, I'm sorry I couldn't make it in person. I'm, like, locked in by, like, a roommate's car.
Yeah.
And so you were just in your car or something like that. And
the whole world's falling on you kind of day. Yeah. Yeah, that happens sometimes. Well, I appreciate you being – I think you were the best person to cry during a workout. And you did the whole workout after that, which is so funny. To do squats while a guy's like, yeah, that's actually really good form.
No, that was iconic, though. I mean, beautiful memories, honestly. I mean,
beautiful
and you
memories.
Were there for me in the deepest and darkest
oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just, and we were going hardcore,
yeah.
And we were doing the fucking like the carb cutting and all
yeah.
of that stuff
intense,
for like the music videos and
intense
shit I've never done in my life.
Body like connection stuff, and I wonder if like I guess I don't know how much you share with like your fans. But
I've actually never shared about the workout thing. Which
yeah,
is kinda
yeah.
Like iconic to talk about.
Well, and it really is to me a testament of how much of a like. And I hope this isn't buttering your bread too much, but I really do
mean
this.
Please, butter away.
Butter it up. But, like, it's such a testament to you being such a fucking artist to me, because you were like, well, fanfare is going to be kind of this, like, pop singer aesthetic, so I'm going to, like, match that to everything in right down to my body. Like,
yeah.
I want to emulate, like, in my own way, in my Dorian way.
The Britney Spears abs.
The Britney Spears
They were on the
looks.
Mood board, mama.
Absolutely. No, so, that it was really, honestly, like, for me, such a cool job as a trainer. Because so often, and it's not like there's anything necessarily wrong with this, but people will come to me and be like, I want to be hot. I want to look like this. I want my ass bigger. I want my, like, all that stuff, which is fine. I understand it. But it was cool to be, like, more... This seemed like more of being part of an artistic vision.
It was, and because you were in the music video.
And being in the music
video.
You're
literally
a
part.
That was a nice cherry on top.
And you shaved your mustache
oh, yeah.
for that, which was iconic to be the frat boy, you know, to fit into that aesthetic, which was meant a lot to me.
For all the work you put in, it was the least I could do. The least I could do. But yeah, like, Dorian really put in, like, work for those videos. Like, and you were doing all that. You were doing these, like, really hard workouts, and we were trying to, like, get as cut a look as we could get in a healthy way while you were still working, because you had to keep your brain working.
Yeah,
and
that was
like,
the craziest part.
And I think you got, like, a good... I think it's helpful in some ways to get a little taste of that, because you understand, man, those people in those photo shoots
oh my God.
I mean, God forbid, bodybuilders.
That's insane.
They're just... someone said this about bodybuilding contests, but it's like, if you took any of the guys on the stage when they're like all oiled up and stuff,
yeah.
and you told them to run 20 yards at a sprint, they would all pass out. They would all, because they're like right on the edge of like just tearing over.
So crazy. Yeah. To experience like that, the mental aspect of that, like what happens to your brain when you like cut carbohydrates and stuff. I was like, and also I was also like, wow, I really see how easy it is for someone to become obsessed in such an unhealthy way. And I got, you know, I realized, like, I just wanted to see, like, how far we could push it and, like, what my tolerance level was, which is not actually that high. Like, I'm kind of not that tolerant, like, of, like, pain and pushing myself sometimes. With certain things I am, but when it comes to, like, physical stuff, like, I get really hot, really cold easily. If you remember, we would be, like, you know... I'd be like barely cold outside, like you're not even wearing a sweatshirt, and I'm like, I need to be in the room right in front of the heater, and then like, or like, I need to be right in front of the air conditioner. Like,
this is a thing though. Like, I think I go too far on the other end where I can like prostrate myself and put myself in like uncomfortable positions when I don't need to. What I gleaned from you when I was like watching you work is you have a great sense of. This might sound a little convoluted, but it's like keeping the vehicle of you running well. Like, and I think a lot of people who are very driven and focused kind of forget about that because they kind of push it a little bit too hard. They're like, oh, I'm driven enough, I'm focused enough where I can work out in the cold or what. But I think you have a good sense of like, well, I could use my energy on that.
Or,
I could use my like discomfort meter or whatever, like let's say like your discomfort fuel on that, but it'll get a little depleted. But you want to use your discomfort fuel for the creative process, which I think is more important.
That's a really nice way of saying I'm a big wimp, honestly. No, it's a really nice way to reframe that, Dan, and I'm gonna stick with that.
I want you to stick with the discomfort fuel theory. But it really was fascinating watching you not only like work, like you're really doing, I mean, the people around you are obviously very talented and skilled, and they help you along the way, but you really are overseeing everything.
I was doing a lot of that. You're right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have you always been like that? Like when you were younger and you were making creative projects, were you always like, I definitely want to be involved in everything here?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Like I really like to collaborate with people too. So it's like definitely like bringing together people. And I'm not like a very technically skilled person when it comes to like, you know, the like technology aspects of it. But I like love working with people and like combining their skills on like the creative stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like part of it's just been out of like doing everything pretty DIY, and like Weston and I were working on everything together for that album and like my previous albums. And yeah, it was just very like homegrown DIY. And even as like the teams got bigger and stuff, you know, part of it was like, well, I can't afford this or that, so we're just gonna have to do it ourselves, you know. But I actually enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. That. Yeah. I mean, I could see it in the stuff you were doing. And you know what? The topic that you brought to me really, in a lot of ways, makes sense, because I think your projects probably take so much like creative. Like that's so duh? Bad for the listeners. No. Yeah, there was a
a hand motion accompanying that
for the audio listeners. Yeah. It really made sense.
Yeah, like, it was like a duh with duh? Like a, almost like an Italian gesturing outward.
I'm trying to. I'm in kind of my like Italian era. My creativity actually has been super high rate level recently, so I'm kind of in my Italian mode.
You're giving Michelangelo.
I'm going on stage.
You're going Leonardo.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm doing this with my hands.
Yes,
I
love
good.
That.
but what you said you wanted to improve on, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but I think you said like sort of revitalizing your excitement about making music.
Yeah.
So when you finish a project, is that usually an issue? Like you just kind of feel empty?
Absolutely. It's like a really bad, I think a lot of artists feel this, but just like a really strong like postpartum feeling.
Yeah.
And you're just like this emptiness of, you're just waiting around to see like who's going to write about it or not, because all the music publications are dead now. As in the last like 2-3 years. And like, you know, waiting for these like external accolades that a lot of them that you maybe are hoping for don't come. And like, I think like performing an album like right after it comes out could be nice. I waited like 4 months or something. And so then like performing the album feels good, because it's like real people are, you know, there like singing the words and like cheering for you. And it's a lot easier to connect with that than it is like just seeing people as Instagram likes and stuff like that. You know, I'm sure you experience the same.
Oh, yeah.
And like, but yeah, it's like November was very dark for me in that way.
Yeah.
After I like released my album in October, and I like did this big show, and then just like that postpartum feeling, it just sucks. And I was like trying to like rush into making new music as a way, it's sort of like getting over a relationship or something, and it's like I was basically trying to like rush into a new relationship way before I was ready with it, by being like, I'm just going to like start working on new music, and then I'm like, there's a way to get excited about something new and to try to avoid that postpartum feeling, but I couldn't avoid it. And actually by running away from it, I kind of made it a little bit worse. Like I didn't give myself the space that I needed to just like feel that way. And I'm kind of not like that, but I'm really trying to work on that. Like, you know? Yeah.
Well, what comes to mind when you say that, it's so funny that you say breakup, because when you start talking about like, I think when it comes to the creative process, what everybody says is there's this moment of sort of, you have to like give in to this liminal space that of non-creativity. You have to give into this, like you're swinging from vine to vine, but in between them, you're just suspended in air. And it really is kind of like an attachment theory thing, where it's like, if you have an insecure attachment style to the creative process, it's really difficult, because you're like, no, I want there to be a vine in the middle too. I want to just always be comfortable and always be fine. But it's just, that's never how creativity works, unfortunately. It's always, there's always going to be that moment of like suspension where you finish one thing and the next thing hasn't yet come to you, and you just have to kind of be open to that thing coming to you.
Totally.
When you started making, like trying too quickly to make music, did it feel a little bit more forced than you? Cause I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like every creative project that I've done, it's always in the middle of, like, absolutely there's a little bit of, like, what's it called? Like musiness, and like it kind of comes to you, but also you kind of need to force it out a little.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that.
Push. Yeah. I feel like also part of it for me is just trying to uncouple creativity from productivity.
Whoa. Intricate. Describe that for a
little
bit.
Yeah. So like, I think that I would just be like addicted to being productive. Like having made a song in the studio, you know, was more important to me than like taking the time to like figure out the musical vibe. And maybe that is by going and making a song in the studio, but maybe that's also by not doing that and like, you know, listening to a bunch of music or just like chilling or, you know, I don't even know. Like, I think that, yeah, it's like I've just found that like the addiction to productivity has definitely gotten in the way of my creativity, because it's like just anxiety about like I have to have an end product, and like thinking with the end in mind, like thinking like, oh well, like I should, you know, before I go on this like next tour, like I should like have a new song to promote, otherwise like what the fuck am I doing? And so like thinking like, okay, well then if I have the new song, then I'll like do the video then, but you know, like a month before, and then like before that, so I have like these 2 weeks to make that song, whatever that's gonna be. And it's like that does sometimes need to be done. But for me, I'm so, like, some people are the opposite. They're all about the creativity, but they never want to finish anything and never able to put it out. That's not my problem.
Sure.
So I have the other problem of what I need to learn is to relax, have fun doing what I'm doing. And then also, like, learn to, you know, when it's like a thing becomes your work, like music, it's hard to get the same enjoyment out of it, because it's like, it's hard for me to even listen to music without hyperanalyzing it, thinking about the entire, like, the artists and like their backstory and their whole career and their successes and failures and how they compare to mine and, you know, like all of that shit that I just want to let go of. Or, you know, a lot of people will be like, if they really like something, they'll be like jealous,
right?
You know, like struggling with that. Or even just like, I sometimes feel like I'm too emotionally sensitive to music or like too hyperstimulated by it, where I'll be like, listening to it, I can't have it on the background if I'm like doing the dishes or something like that. Speaking of doing the, you're the doing the dishes guy.
Hit the switch right over there.
Oh yeah, the scene. Oh my god, I'm looking right at it. But you know, like I can't really have music on in the background, because then I just like start thinking about it and it will distract me from the task at hand. Or like I just can't stop the spiraling thoughts that come along with it. Like certain kinds of music, yeah, like some jazz or like something like that, it's totally fine, because I'm not in the business of making that type of music. Sure. But with other things, I'm like, I'm thinking about the production and the sounds and like, oh, that maybe kind of sounds dated, and like they probably got this from that splice pack and like blah, blah, blah. I don't know, just like thinking about it, like it's like a chef eating food, you know?
Yeah. There's so many connections built into your brain when it comes to this topic. I the same thing happens to me sometimes when I'm watching stand-up. And it, to me personally, it takes a really special performance, good or bad. Mm. Sometimes there'll be really, really good comics on a lineup, and I'll try watching them, but you just go like, this is like perfect stand-up, and the crowd is loving it, but you're kind of just watching it like for the technical aspect. It just takes some guy to go up there, and I won't say who the comic was, because they're one of the funniest comics ever, but there was a really weird set at the Comedy Store last night where a huge, huge celebrity went up on stage. Mm. It was their first time on stage in like 2 years, and I think he said he was like really high.
Oh god.
And he had,
that's like my worst nightmare. Yeah. I'm just being high in general.
Oh, this I mean, this guy, I mean, it could have been a million people there, he wouldn't have been fazed. Yeah. That's the kind of celebrity he was. But he had a joke where the setup of the joke was, why do people with bad breath always say the word sandbag? Just complete nonsense. He was just going up there,
that's kind of
doing
fire.
Complete ad lib nonsense. But I was watching, I was like, whoa, like you're watching it as a performer, you're going like, oh, I guess I could do that. Like, that is a thing a comic could do, is just kind of do a performance like that. But the thing that you're describing to me, like with all the plates that you have spinning, with you particularly in your creative process, I feel like the extension of you worrying about the articles and worrying about the social media. And I was there, and it's like musicians now, it's so tough because you have to also be a TikToker to be a musician. And I've really enjoyed your TikTok. I actually had something to lined up for that a little bit later. Nice. But it's like, it's just crazy that you also have to do that now.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the creative process, it's like, I think the more stuff you have to think about there, the less you're sort of in tune with your like internal calibrator.
Totally, yeah.
And it's really, really tough when you have this whole extra thing now where you also have to be like the promoter of the music in such a huge way.
Yeah.
It's tough to be a person kind of like in the wings of the stage now. You have to always be on stage even when you're not creating.
Doctors have to have TikToks nowadays. Yeah. Dentists be having TikToks. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a bizarre world we're in.
Yeah. Do you feel like that has an effect on your creativity at all, or has it sort of blended in now?
I mean, I'm trying to actually get like inspired to do TikToks in like a fun, like my own way, but it's very mood based. Like sometimes I'll be like, you know, be really funny, I'm really in the mood to do it, and then sometimes I'm like, that is just the worst thing I could think of, that app, I don't want to like pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
you know. And then it's like, I don't know, it's very mood based. I would say that a lot, but then again, like a lot of things are like that too for me anyway.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about it? Are you really enjoy it? I mean, hopefully you enjoy it.
I really enjoy it.
Don't say you don't enjoy it.
I hate it.
You're gonna ruin the illusion. No, no,
listen, there's a whole team behind me. They're forcing me to make the TikToks.
I got a gun to my head.
Yeah I'm doing it for the NRA. I'm doing like subliminal messaging that's pro gun in every single one of my TikToks.
You guys just don't know it yet.
You really, every single one of my followers in like 2 years is gonna get a Desert Eagle.
That's iconic.
Just based off of my self-help mental health comedy TikTok. But no, it's always been like just me, and not having anyone else to have to worry about is such a godsend.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no creative partners. I don't need anyone to shoot the videos.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see, but there's a rice cooker right there. That's my tripod. I don't use a tripod for the videos. I've always used the rice cooker to the right of the sink. I put my phone on the rice cooker. Right. Yeah. If you go that rice cooker right there, I set my phone up there.
That's
the perfect.
Iconic.
I've always used that because I started doing the videos before I had a tripod because I didn't need a tripod.
Yeah.
I wasn't like filming anything.
Yeah.
And so it's so simple.
I love that.
Yeah. And
rice cooker.
It really showed me, like, it broke down the process to me to this like really digestible level where now it actually helps me with writing, because when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, what's the idea today? Is there an idea today? What can I write about? Like, how can this turn into stand-up? Which is, like, the exciting thing for me is they kind of help each other in this way.
Totally.
A stand-up idea can turn into that. But, I mean, it can be stifling. Like, it would be stifling if that was my only source of income, like it is for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's when you start seeing, like, when someone... I think it's funny how pressure can affect the creative process.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
It can be really good because it forces you to be like, I gotta put something out. And sometimes when that happens, like, it creates this kind of beautiful space where the being forced actually helps you push out something that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Yeah.
But then other times, it just, you put something out and you're like, that could have stayed in.
Yeah, definitely.
That could have stayed an inside thought. Yeah.
But that's kind of the funny thing about TikTok too, is that it's kind of like so low stakes that it is like such a good testing ground for just whatever. But then sometimes you're like, you put a song out, or like you tease a song and it gets like no traction, then you're like, oh God, it's doomed, but it still might do well or something.
Yeah,
it's just like, you know, it just didn't happen to catch on. So it's like not really the end all be all. It's like gambling.
Yeah, it is.
And I think it's all based on gambling, and then it's like the intermittent reward system. And that's what is causing the dopamine addiction or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's dopamine, but yeah, the addiction in the brain where it's like, it's not like you win every time when you go on TikTok and post on TikTok. You don't get hits every single time, but a couple of them out of however many might go big, and the other ones get like, you know, like your normal stable amount. But that's what keeps people coming back for more.
Yeah, that, it's so interesting. I don't know if we've spoken about this at length, but I love Vegas and I love gambling.
I know you love gambling.
I love poker.
And poker, yeah.
It's so funny because the last podcast I did, it was my good friend Ahmed, and he also called me out for liking gambling a lot. But
I forgot. I wasn't thinking about that consciously, but maybe subconsciously.
No, not at all. No.
I actually hate. Well, my dad was addicted to gambling, like blackjack specifically. Lost so much money, and then like went to like a Gamblers Anonymous meeting and. Got like whatever. He only went once, but he was like, it was like enough to be like, give him some tools to be like,
right,
whatever, get his shit together with that. But you know, he just channels that into like other areas of like his job and stuff, but he still has that part of his brain.
Was this when you were a kid this was happening?
Yeah, and like, and also before like I was born and stuff, yeah. Too, actually, weirdly, so also not to reveal too much about him, but he also went on Ozempic.
Whoa.
And he said that it dampened, and it's like known to do this, it dampened, and the way it dampens like food craving, it also dampened the desire to gamble for him.
Whoa. Because
he'll do like scratch offs or lottery tickets and stuff.
Yeah.
But he limits it to that pretty much. He can actually go to a casino and he can do it and he won't be in a crazy like spiral of it. But weirdly, I hate gambling. Like, yeah. I love Las Vegas, though. And yeah. I love everything about the aesthetic. I love everything about slot machines other than using them. I just love to look at them.
Yeah.
I, like, love... But, like... And, like, every other part of gambling. But it's funny because, to me, it's so... I find it so stressful. Like, the feeling I would get... I'd rather, like, take a $20 bill and rather than, like, you know, gamble it, I'm like, let me just take this to the gift shop. You know, like, I'm guaranteed to have the money. I have it right here.
Yeah, no.
You know?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, the Ozempic thing makes a lot of sense because the last few times I've gone to Vegas, no one at the slot machines is on Ozempic. I can say that for sure. I can say that for absolute certainty. But, did I ever tell you about the I think I did. That was the – because I've done a few comedy trips to Vegas now, but one of the first ones, we were – me and my buddy Will were going to this – we were staying at Arizona Charlie's Decanter.
Hold on, let's just unpack that for a moment.
Yeah.
Where the hell even is
Arizona Charlie's? Oh, if you
is
think
it
it's
famous?
Oh, well, you know the strip, like the
yeah.
It's
this
so
is
far
off,
from
off.
There.
I was gonna say that's an Arizona Charlie's
Arizona
Decanter.
Charlie's Decanter.
I'm like, that's like what I stayed at the Orleans or whatever once, or what I think it's here. It's off the strip.
You don't have to brag or anything.
You
don't have to brag or nothing.
It's only off the strip, but you're talking like off.
I'm off the strip.
Yeah, that's
the people at the Orleans are like, oh my God, you're saying Arizona Charlie's? At least we're based on a city that like actually gambles and have fun. You're based on like the AR-15 state.
That's fucking crazy. Wait, but tell me about. So is the theme is Arizona?
The theme is bed bugs. That's the theme. If we were talking about the theme of Arizona,
and cigarette holes
and like gambling bingo. That's the big thing at Arizona, Charlie.
That sounds kind of fun.
It's kind of fun.
Or there's no skill. Well, wait, that's a lot of gambling.
Well, it's very. Here's what it's fun for. It's fun for people where if you.
It's a good start.
You get a social security check in the mail because you're over 65 and you go, this is too much money. Let's cut this down a little bit. Yeah. You go to the bingo and you have a great time.
That's
but
amazing.
We get in this Uber like on the way away from the show. We're at like Caesar's Palace or something. And we go, oh yeah, we're going to Arizona Charlie's. And the driver is this like real estate guy. He
That's
moved
so
there.
Vegas.
Yeah,
That's so Vegas.
It's so Vegas. He moved there in like 2019, right before the pandemic, and he was like, it was the best move I ever made, man. Like, I love it out here. And he was like, oh, you guys are going to Arizona Charlie's? And we were like, oh yeah, do you know? He's like, yeah, man. If you get to the end of the night and you haven't scored yet, you gotta go to Arizona Charlie's.
What?
And we realized he's
Meaning
talking about
the
like,
women.
Yeah, he's like
the women are loose and the slots.
Looser. I don't know which one's looser. Yeah. But he's driving, and I quote, that's where you gotta find all the sexy Latina mamas. And me and my buddy are
like,
we don't know what he's talking about, but we only saw Arizona Charlie's during the day at that point, because we checked in and we went straight to the show. So we're like, oh, maybe it's like crazy at night.
Yeah.
We show up to Arizona Charlie's, look around. There is not a person under 70.
It's and the, that's what he meant by the mama
That's what
part.
He meant. And I'm like, damn, is this, I mean, it makes him a much cooler character.
No judgment.
A Rolex wearing Uber driver who also does real estate, who's just at the end of the night, it's 3 a.m. He just goes to Arizona Charlie's and just finds whatever, like, octogenarian he can and just gives her hell. That's what a life, huh? What a beautiful life.
That is honestly a beautiful life.
It's a great life.
I'm obsessed with that. Wow. If you haven't scored, I like that it's like, it's a guarantee.
He's gamified it. Yeah. He's like, you're not gambling at Arizona, yeah. Charlie.
But
what if you guys were like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know, dude. I mean, why do you think we're going? You want to come with? Yeah. Come on, man. This could be the last ride of your night.
Iconic.
This could be the second to last ride of your night, brother. Let's go to Arizona, Charlie. But I've seen so many people like who are definitely really, really into gambling, and it's such a fascinating like addiction because there's no direct substance. Like, there's so many different substances with gambling.
Yeah.
Whereas with, like, if you're addicted to heroin, there's heroin. Yeah. If you're addicted to booze, it's booze. But if you're addicted to gambling, it's, like, slots, sports. Like, there's so scratch tickets. Like, there's so many different ways of that manifesting. It's really, really fascinating. But, yeah, it's a tough one. No one in my family is really, like, super into gambling. They had their own vices. I think if you're in entertainment, there has to be something fucked up in your family, right?
Yeah, I think so. Wait, hold on. Not me. Hold on. Entertainment? Wait a minute. That doesn't apply to myself.
Now that I think about it, I'm perfect in every way. So when it comes to the music, when it comes to, like, trying to find the excitement again.
Yeah.
Is there any methodology, or is it just like this very uncomfortable waiting?
Well, I actually had I kind of realized something on the ride over here, actually, which was unexpected realization that I had, and I don't know where it's going to go. Basically, I always thought, okay, listening to music, I was like, I would literally write it on my to-do list as like a chore. And I would be like, you know, I need to like sit down and do this. I need to see, you know, what are my peers doing? What's new stuff coming out? And of course, that is good research and like just to stay in touch with things. And also, you know, you might find something that you're like, this is amazing. And then you're like, I want to collab with this artist or work with that producer or whatever. So that's really good. But I got in the car and I was like, okay, I have an 18-minute drive. What am I going to listen to? And then I was like, I just want to listen to something that feels amazing. And then I was like, I'm going to put the Strokes on because, like, I just am obsessed with their melodies. And, like, I just love, like, Julian Casablancas, like, voice and performance and, like, vocal melodies. And then I was like, wait a minute. Maybe the way to, like, get back into music is to – this is going to sound like the stupidest fucking thing ever uttered. But, you know – to listen to music that I love. Like, it might be something that I already know, but it's like, just let myself listen to that shit over and over again. And like, that can, I don't know, I'm like still thinking this through because I like just kind of had the thought on the drive over. But I was like, this whole listening to music thing, it doesn't have to be like where I beat it into myself and it's like taking a cold shower every day or like ending on a cold shower, you know, where it's like you're doing the painful thing on purpose to like deaden yourself to like the rest of the pain you're going to face in the rest of the day, you know. But it's like listening to music doesn't need to be like that. It can be pleasurable. And I know this sounds crazy because music is so pleasurable for so many people, but I've just come to see it as this chore that like it's like doing the dishes for me, you know.
No, that with comedy, it's
like cleaning the toilet more so.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like cleaning.
You're
the
not
toilet.
Looking forward to doing it, but you got to do it, or at least you got to hire somebody to do it if you can't. But you can't let it just go.
Yeah, it's not. And even if you hire somebody, they're cleaning it, and you're like, oh, they're in there. That sucks.
You feeling for them?
Oh,
you
I
know?
Didn't do good stuff in there. Yeah, and they have to feel the brunt of that. But no, like I always have to remind myself, which is the best advice anyone's ever given, is like, if you're not having fun, there's no reason your audience should. If you're not having fun, why would your audience? Like, if you...
Totally.
There is some sort of, like, a psychic exchange between the creation that you make and the consumption of it from the people, where it's almost like a subliminal message that you're sending. And I think a lot of the times, if you're kind of like dead making it, if you're like, this isn't fun for me, I'm not like feeling good, those waves hit your audience and they
100%.
Go, I think they kind of go like, oh, this isn't like, this doesn't come from a place of love. You can kind of tell with music like that. So that's cool. Like connecting to the stuff that you like, almost like you're hitting a tuning fork. Like, like you're hitting a tuning fork and putting it on your head and being like, oh, I'm just going to let this kind of reverberate and then see what comes back.
Totally.
That's great.
Yeah. I didn't understand the tuning fork thing. It's going to take me longer to process that.
No,
but
don't
I'm
worry
sure it's
about
good,
it.
But it's taking my, no, I'm a little slow in the mind.
While we're doing it, actually, I had a couple of potential ways to help your creative process.
Okay,
I was wondering
if
I could share those
Please.
With you. So I think another way, like listening to somebody that you really love, that I think will definitely connect you to like your core. But I think also reaching out to
I heard you say the word core and I got triggered.
You start,
like, what? Ah. My core engaged my what are we talking about?
You start just reflexively doing. I think another way of doing that is hearing new exciting music that is almost so good it feels connected to God. Have you ever heard of You Know Miles?
I don't believe so. Well, actually, maybe.
Maybe. Let's take a look.
I get paid every day of the week. Why this nigga steady hating on me?
Wait, I have heard this.
Yeah.
Incredible.
If you can tell, he has like about $23 in his
hand. No, Justin Bieber,
that's
but
incredible.
I'm sorry. They say they get hot, but they not hot as Bob Marley. All I really need is six hot wings.
So
that is beautiful.
You know,
honestly,
is very. I've DM'd You Know. I don't know if you know anything about his social media presence at all.
I don't.
It's much like his music, if you know what I'm saying. It's kind of out there, but he'll often give offers like, if you give me $50, I will blank. And one of them was, I will give you really bad advice. And I DM'd him and I was like, please, You Know, I really need like advice on, and he hit me back and we had a little back and forth. I'm trying so hard to
get him on the podcast.
I want him on the podcast so
bad. Where's he based?
He's from Pontiac, Michigan.
That's amazing.
My now girlfriend is from Northern Michigan, so
there's
knows
a connection there.
There's a connection there. I'm gonna try as hard as I can to get. He can wear the you can wear the mask. Okay, you can if you want to break the chair, you can break the chair. Okay, there's something so, because music now, like I think that any new advent causes a different avenue for different kinds of music, good and bad, to make its way through.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are so many people out there trying to be like You Know Miles in their own way. Let's listen to another one real quick.
See.
I beat my grandma with a pumpkin, hey. I beat my grandma with a pumpkin, hey. I beat my grandma with a pumpkin, hey. Her old ass had it coming, hey. I beat my grandma with a pumpkin, hey. I beat my grandma with a pumpkin.
I mean, the ad libs, they broke the pumpkin.
Hey, her old ass had it coming, hey. Her old ass had it coming, hey. Her old ass did it.
I mean,
hey, I still beat her with a pumpkin.
There's, there really
never
is.
Never heard that one. That's really something for the whole family.
I don't want to overstate it. But there is something about You Know Miles where I go, there is a level of genius here where I couldn't think of doing that.
No, totally.
When you're thinking about like funny in the fun, so let's back up here for the listeners. You Know Miles, one of the best rappers, funniest people ever. I mean, like, he's listened to his song. He has a bunch of songs about history where he talks about figures that he clearly just has no idea what they did.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm a history head, so I'm going to need to get into some of that.
It's really, really good. There's one about William Shakespeare where he doesn't mention a single thing about plays. He
that
just says
rocks.
It's really good, but he'll get on songs with people who are like trying to be funny rap. And that's its own thing.
Yeah. But it doesn't hit the same as his own stuff.
It doesn't work because they'll get on and have like a really funny, well thought out, multi layered verse, and then he'll go on and be like he just has a song where he says "fuck every X man" and he just names the X man.
Amazing.
It's like there's a level of funny, and maybe it's like the internet kid part of me, but I'm like, this is the core.
Yeah.
This is the source of funny.
Totally. I mean, I kind of think that funny in that way also relates to cool, where it's like, the effortlessness is really a part of it. Because if you're trying too hard, you know, I think people just, they feel the desperation, they feel the anxiety of that. Like, everyone has their own feelings about that, of course. I think about this stuff daily, but nobody likes to be reminded of that desperation. They just want it to feel effortless, and I feel like that's what humor and, like, coolness have in common, maybe.
A very interesting point you just made, because I can't think of anything more difficult nowadays than making it seem effortless, because you are constantly trying to sell the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, it really is like the personal brandification of music and art in general sort of gets in the way of that, doesn't
totally. It? Totally. But I do think a lot of people are really good at doing effortlessness on TikTok.
Yeah.
And I think that those are like the ones that like really take off. I mean, not that other stuff doesn't take off, but that's why it's really hard. I think like people that are doing like SNL, for example, is just like they're already up against like it's a sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
Actually, that's actually how I've felt about, well, I'm not that, I don't know that much about comedy, but just like even like even I feel like there's got to be so much pressure just to call it that. It's like you're going somewhere to expect someone to be funny on stage. Like, gosh, there's a lot of pressure.
And you know what, because you're so completely right, because with SNL it's like we set up all these cameras. We made a multi-year institution.
And you better be funny.
You better be funny right now in this box yeah. that we created for you. And the crazy thing is, like, there are standout people that are still able to do it.
Yeah.
One of the reasons, and I think a lot of people were really kind of flabbergasted by Pete Davidson's success, but I think one of the things that he does, on our note, is he does very much like embody this kind of effortlessness.
Yeah.
Like he's not up there being a tryhard.
Yeah.
And there's something very compelling about that.
Totally.
There's something that really draws you in about that, or draws like a lot of people in about
definitely,
that.
Definitely, yeah.
But we had a couple of questions actually that relate yeah. to music that I wanted to. Oh, actually, no, we have to go into this.
Oh yeah, the Wonka experience.
Can we talk about the Wonka experience?
Yeah.
Okay.
Incredible.
So on the TikTok note, on the creativity note, Dorian made one of the funniest videos I've ever seen, because I know when you looked at the Wonka experience, you were like, this is someone trying to do something that I have successfully done and failed, which is making a scene, right? Like,
yeah.
all your music oh, videos, yeah. especially from what I saw in Freak Mode, you're making a scene, an experience for people,
yeah.
and you're bringing them into, you're sort of creating your own little world. And
yeah.
they tried doing that with the Wonka experience. I just want to play a little bit of this,
yeah.
but we can describe the Wonka experience later.
I have become obsessed with the Wonka experience scandal, and I figured out exactly where they rented these props from. It's a company called EPH Creative, based in the UK. I remembered it because I was looking for props for a music video, and I remember these freaking mushrooms. Right here, you can rent them for £435 on the website. The chocolate bar, that comes in at a reasonable £160. I mean, guys, you can't beat it. You can get this beautiful rainbow archway for a mere £525. And I mean, this factory
yeah.
thing, why not?
It's
you could throw
so
a party,
bad.
Like £435. Like the piece de resistance, though, this chocolate bridge thing, that might set you back a pretty penny. But let me tell you what, honestly, somebody should like throw a club night with this stuff, because I would turn up at that. Let me tell you what, stay tuned for part
That's
two.
A good, that the club night thing is a good idea.
Yeah.
So you were looking for props and you stumbled upon the genesis of the Wonka experience.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, I just remembered it from like a long time ago. And then I was like, I've totally seen that stuff. Because also it was like the props were very well made.
Sure.
But the rest of the experience was not. So I was like, okay, they clearly did not make that stuff. They rented it. And then I was like, oh, wait, that is kind of a pretty generic party theme. And then I remembered. So this website, it specializes in, yeah, like party themed stuff. Because I don't know, I was looking for like a, this was like years ago. I think I was looking for like a giant telephone or something like that. And I came across this website, but I was really bummed out because it was based in the UK.
Yeah.
So I couldn't rent it. But yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. The whole experience thing is like so interesting, because like on the one hand, obviously we're going to be seeing more of these scammy ones. And now I think like, I feel like I saw something, I can't remember what it was, but it was like maybe somebody was doing it to try to be like this, to get viral, like on purpose or something. Like one of these shitty experiences, or it was like another shitty experience that was
yeah.
happening. And I think it's so interesting that it's like people are actually craving like these experiences in general. Like people want, you know, they we're fed up of, I mean, we've already been sold everything we could possibly buy and consume. So it's like, I don't know, like we want like photo opportunities. We want to like, actually, I think people just want to be transported to something else special and
we
magical.
We want to be immersed. Yeah. We want to be immersed in something magical. We want to be like sent to a different world now, because it sort of is like the final frontier when we're edging up to like a complete like 4D experience. Like, it's really interesting. And the Wonka experience thing, I was looking at all the videos, because it hit two very specific nerves for me. One is, and this, it kind of made me a little sad, but like I was thinking, like, if I was a kid, how would I have processed? It's one of two ways. It's like, if you're a kid, you don't necessarily know any different.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I wonder, like, if everyone's like, oh, the kids were, like, crying because it was so bad or whatever. Or I don't know if that was said. But just, like, I think I might have been, like, it was kind of cool. I don't know. I recently found a picture of myself when I went to a Jurassic Park, like, experience thing when I was a little kid. And it was, like, it was a lot smaller than I remember, but it was basically like just a photo op with like a dinosaur and like on a background. And I do remember being kind of disappointed because I thought maybe it'd be bigger, but I was like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But you're sorry, I derailed the other point you were about to make.
No, not at all. The second one is just, I love a grift.
There's something, a
good grift is really bad because it really hurts people.
Yeah.
Like a Ponzi scheme or something like that.
You're
losing your grandma money and stuff. But a bad grift like this, the worst thing that happens is like a British mom loses $40, which that sucks.
Yeah.
But the humor, the laughs we get from it, the joy of seeing just whoever made that, what is going through their head.
Totally.
Because I feel like I've done a bad job at work before. I've done interviews where I've sold myself as having more skills than I normally do, and I feel like a fraud when I do that. How is this person getting by knowing they did what they did? How is this, like, it really does, it puts you in the mind and the shoes of somebody who's like just a different kind of person, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe they're not.
You know, the thing is too, like, okay, so my friend sent it to me and was like, have you seen the Wonka stuff? It's totally like that Halloween party that we did in 2018. And it was like, essentially we had like, our friend was throwing a party in this huge warehouse. And I'd gotten all these decorations like from Home Depot and Amazon, and whatever, like stuff that we were going to return at the end. And basically it was like, she was like, you can play the party if... This is crazy. Like, if you, like, do the decorations was, like, sort of the thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was, like, worth it. Like, you know, it was other artists was playing, and I, like, wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, I've been there.
So, yeah. So, anyway, so we did these decorations, and it was, like, I was, like, but I got these, you know, like, 8-foot by 10-foot backdrops. They're going to cover this wall. And then I got, like, you know, these, like, ghosts, and they were going to be like this. We were going to make, like, a heaven side and a hell side.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, we got, like, angel things here, and one got this cloud backdrop, and then on this side, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's a huge, huge fucking warehouse. So any little things that we got, it could have made this room look amazing. Oh, that would be a totally immersive haunted house, whatever.
Yeah.
But when you take these tiny things and you spread them amongst this, it's literally looked like that. Where it's like, the prop might have been good, but when it's sitting in a sea of gray concrete, it looks like shit.
Volume's important.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I actually really empathized with them, because I'm like, if they'd rented a smaller warehouse, I literally was the type of guy that had that fucking, you know, where they have like that little Wonka Candyland ass looking like backdrop all like taped to the fucking like concrete wall. I'm like, that was literally me taping a backdrop of 7x5-foot flame backdrop, and that was supposed to be hell.
I just this is maybe a bit of a tangent, but you would make a great Willy Wonka.
Thank you.
I think you would be a great casting for another Willy Wonka
remake.
Thank
you. Honestly, I love that.
Yeah.
I would really fuck with that.
Or
the Joker. You know, I'll take him. I'll do both of those. That was my dream role. I'll take both of them.
You're one of the few people that could easily play Willy Wonka or the Joker.
Man,
Gene Wilder, R.I.P., he would have a tough time playing the Joker.
Damn, actually, that'd be crazy. I'm just like, imagine.
I think
that.
He'd be cool. I think now that I say it, I think he'd be a great Joker.
Yeah, actually, he'd be incredible.
A
yeah.
little fucked up.
His
yeah.
Willy Wonka is just so good. It's got this dark energy that is super fucking weird. Yes. And like, it's like the actually, I like the Johnny Depp one too, but he's a lot, you know, he's got his own thing.
More animated.
But he's a lot more like, I'm a cartoon character, like cosplay, like this vibe.
Right.
Like. But, you know, I didn't see the Timothée Chalamet one. Have you seen it?
No.
I'm very curious.
I'm
but
curious
also,
too.
Like, he's a, like such a good-looking person. Why does he look so... He doesn't even look that good in the movie.
I mean, I think it's hard to look good as...
I agree. I disagree.
Oh, you...
I think that is one of the hottest characters... of all time. Yes. Willy Wonka. Are you kidding
Willy
me?
Wonka?
Yes,
wait,
that
wait.
Is an international sex symbol.
I guess there is something.
They had to put the movie for kids, but they had to put something in for the adults.
Right. And,
they put that tasty Willy Wonka.
He is a little tasty. Now that I'm
Come
looking
on,
at
he's
him.
He's sexy.
It's the eye. For Wilder, though, it's those fucking haunting eyes that
yeah.
he has. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
And I love the bob. I love that they chose to go with a bob for the Johnny Depp.
Can I say, I don't know if this will get me in trouble, but I do think big dick energy coming from Willy Wonka.
100% on the Gene Wilder.
On the Gene Wilder side yeah. of things. Yeah. I think.
A bit, I don't know how to place that one.
The Depp, we're looking at a little bit more of like, I think maybe a elevated version of a Reddit guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Elevated.
Like if they shaved, cleaned, took a shower, got their hair
if
done.
If they actually listened to what they tell you to do on the Red Pill
yeah.
forums, that's
yeah.
what you end up with. He's mewing. He's on a 2-year mewing.
For
streak.
Real. For real. Yeah.
But
then that fuck ass Bob is a whole other.
Yeah.
Like, what was the creative choice? Like, I would love to see the mood board. I'm not even dissing it. I'm just saying.
No,
like,
not at all.
I'm just like, the Bob was a super bold choice for
super
that.
Bold choice.
Like, I don't know.
Imagine you like make you know you're about to make like a movie that's worth $100 million, $200 million.
Yeah.
And at the center of that $200 million endeavor is a bob.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
I mean, think about Vogue magazine, Anna
yeah.
Wintour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of bobs at the center of that much money, honey. But yeah, no, like, also, he's like creepier in like a more two-dimensional way. Johnny, he's amazing. I mean, abuse allegations aside.
Right.
That's iconic, though. Gene Wilder, because he's just giving, oh, not us pulling up this article. It says Willy Wonka is a lot creepier 45 years later. I'm
shut
like,
up.
Yeah, it probably is. But
shut up.
Now I'm having to read that. Yeah, I mean, of course it's going to be creepy, but also it's like, what kind of creepy? Oh, raging psychopath who solicits children worldwide to murder. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. Is this a cancellation piece on
Willy
Wonka?
We're trying to cancel Willy Wonka.
Okay, yeah, this is 2016.
Yeah. Oh.
This is the article. Classic. Honestly, let's go back. Bring me back to 2016.
Yeah.
I want to do it all over again.
Yeah, yeah. No, there
2016 through 2020. I'm ready. Bring me back.
There's a few people we didn't get to. And it's just, I think there is something so beautiful and artistic, like at the height of American almost like relapse into hatred and violence to make an article that's like, was Patrick Starr problematic?
Yeah.
There's something just so beautiful about that. Like that 2016, we have so many huge problems. Let's go after Gene Wilder's iconic character that did nothing but make people happy.
Yeah, no, there is something. There's something. It just like struck a chord. It's like oddly satisfying. Like everyone wants to see something destroyed.
Yeah.
What is it? The Schadenfreude or whatever.
Yeah.
Like everyone does want to see somebody taken down. It's satisfying. And obviously there's legitimate things that need to be taken down and dismantled and so forth. But there's another part where it's purely for pleasure. I mean, all these documentaries about like, I love watching like cult documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
And like, so does everyone. But it's like, you know that it's all about abuse, about heinous things that happen to
horrible,
people.
Horrible, yeah.
You know, and it's good to learn about those things. And I, you know, I certainly think that that's better than not talking about that stuff, obviously. And I'm certainly entertained. But it's also bizarre that it is a form of entertainment. People unwind at the end of the night with true crime.
Murder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's what it says, I think, is A, obviously just like a morbid curiosity.
Yeah.
But going back to something that you said, like, I think there's like a spectrum when it comes to like taking things down that people maybe are aware of, but we don't delve into it very often. There's stuff on the foreign where it's like absolutely horrible, heinous stuff.
Yeah.
That, like, we should not put up with in any way. And there's stuff on the other end where it's like, yeah, that we really didn't have to go that hard. And then there's this interesting stuff in the middle where maybe someone did something bad, but also we just don't like them. And when
yeah.
we can combine those things, it just sort of morphs into this very interesting mixture, this stew of like good points and also like going too far.
Yeah.
And I think it's all just, it's so funny that we point at 2016, because now 8 years later, I think as a society, as like weird and messed up as things are, I really do think we have progressed in terms of the language that we use, the like knowing how hard to go after things, what to go after.
We had
like,
to take it too far to know.
I think
yeah.
to a degree it's
I think that
true.
A lot of things are like that.
A lot
you know?
Of things are like that. And it's like, yeah, it's funny when you think of the whole social. I mean, it's funny how related to the zeitgeist your creative process is, too.
Definitely.
Thinking about these things, especially like talking to you when you were in the midst of making music and stuff, you combine, like, I always imagined, like, a musician to get inspiration would just listen to other music, but you're, like, reading Camus and stuff. It's very interesting, like.
Wait, I don't know where you got the Camus
not
one
necessarily.
From.
I'm
oh,
just,
okay, because
I was like, was I?
No, but I, yeah, no, totally.
I know two philosophers.
Yeah, no, that
and I picked
work.
The one I can pronounce right. Yeah. I don't know if it's Sartre or Sartre.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever, who cares? I guess he was pretty important. But it's like, when you, like, ramp up into a creative project, is the music there first, or is the like overarching theme there first?
It used to be that the theme was there first, and I really, you know, like I studied like philosophy, history of science and all that stuff in college, and was like very academic, was like into like economics and all that stuff. But I'm actually trying to do the opposite right now and just really be all about the music and just see what happens as an experiment. It's definitely a weird part of like kind of turning off some parts of my brain and trying to activate like other parts of like feeling and like subconscious mind and all that. Right. But I'm really excited to like challenge myself and like grow in that way and like kind of do what a lot of people do, I feel like, which is just like feel the music and like what feels good. And
it's so exciting.
Rather than like overthinking and, you know, rationalizing it and like, you know, that's been what I've done in the past, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just I'm trying to switch it up for myself. But, yeah, I mean, I actually got my start in the 2016 sort of BuzzFeed mm-hmm. era of doing stuff. Like, I was doing these music videos for Refinery 29, mm-hmm. and it was all in that, you know, sort of pink feminism, like, early days of that. And then I pivoted, like, once the feminism thing, I was like, okay, now people are taking it into this like pink pussy hat thing, like later, and I was like, all right, I'm past all that. Now I'm on to like the queer stuff and like, you know, videos about the history of drag and like all this. And then, you know, that sort of, I mean, not that that's fully been like, it has been co-opted in a lot of ways, like just you know, by capitalism, like everything
sure.
becomes subsumed by that. But yeah, it's just, it's been very interesting. I feel like my own career arc has gone along the cultural like development of these things, how it starts, something starts as radical, becomes co-opted by capitalism, commercialized, etc., and or is taken too far, or, you know, and then there's like, it causes a reaction to it. I don't know, I'm all very fascinated in all of that stuff, and like
yeah.
being old enough now to have lived through cycles that I can see, you know, is like really amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really crazy to see things like coming again in a new form and like by new people, and you just realize, oh, this does sort of just keep spiraling in its own ways, like good or bad.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it spirals positively and sometimes it spirals negatively, but it's really fascinating. When coming to the end of this, and then we'll switch to the Patreon really quickly.
Yeah.
Moving forward, when it comes to like trying to revitalize your creative oomph of music. I was really curious to ask, has this happened before, like in a similar way, or do you think this is a new feeling that you have right now?
I think I felt that way before my third album. Like, my second album, I was, like, already raring to go with, like, a ton of ideas. Yeah. That were stuff that, like, I didn't get to put in the first album, but, like, new ideas I had right off the bat. So that was, like, it was, like, yeah, that was really, that was cool. And that one, the first two albums came super fast and yeah. easy. And the third one did not. And now I'm working on, you know, whatever will be next, the fourth one, or, like, you know, I don't know if I'll do album singles or EP or what. But, yeah, I think it's like there's always that initial idea that you have, and then you kind of like, not that you run out of ideas, but it's like, you know, basically the first body of work you have is kind of the culmination of stuff that actually has been building up for years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, I was thinking about that stuff for years and years and years, and then I put it into this thing.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's my alarm. Let me grab that.
Oh.
It was for the car.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, no, the car is safe. We're parking on a street in beautiful Hollywood where there's every single parking restriction sign. If you've ever seen a Hollywood parking restriction sign, it's like 8 different "you can't park here"s all stacked on top of each other, and you just have to do math as an adult that most physicists shouldn't have to do. You have to be like, okay, no parking from 4 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then no parking 8 p.m. on Mondays through Wednesdays. And you just sit there and you're like, I'll just get towed. I'll just go back to buggies and carriages. I'll just ride a horse, get off the horse, let that horse run free through Hollywood. That's what I'll do. I'll get on a horse. I'll ride it to whatever stinky, stinky restaurant I'm going to. Hop off. And then just let that horse find a new owner. Okay? But a lot has been said about Hollywood and the tickets here. You're probably bored. Even if you've never been here, you understand that it's bad. But it is bad. I got my girlfriend's car towed not too long ago. And that was just for fun. I did that on purpose, actually. I did that on purpose. I got her car towed not too far. I saw that it was a tow zone, and I was like, let's just go for it.
You got somebody else's?
I got my girlfriend's car towed.
That is rough. He, over here?
Yes.
That's rough.
Sit down, because I do have to tell you about this. It was Valentine's Day.
Oh no,
she comes over because she wants to make fondue, and so she has to unload all the stuff. So I unload it with her, and I go, I'll park your car while you just get started, because it was like a busy day in Hollywood. So I park her car, get out, whatever. Wake up the next morning. As I wake up, I realize in my dumb, like, sleep-addled brain, oh, it said you have to move your car by 7. I look at the clock. It's 9. I sprint over to it.
Now you got me worried. Gone.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine. Okay. This was over
famous
by the
last words.
this is over by the construction site.
Okay.
But I got to experience a really fun, interesting thing.
Okay.
I got to be the boyfriend who got his girlfriend's car towed
on Valentine's Day.
And when you're that guy, they've experienced that at the tow lot before, where I show up and she's not there yet because she has to do work stuff, because, you know, she has a job and is an adult and is an actual human being, unlike me. And the guy's like, oh, like, we need your, like, ID, and we need, like, proof of registration. I was like, oh, well, it's not my car, it's my girlfriend's car. And the guy just looks at me and he gives me this look like, yeah, I've seen a dumb piece of shit before. Yeah, he's like, yeah, I've seen this before. I was like, no, you don't. It was like, there was fondue involved. He was like, yeah, sure, buddy. I've heard every story.
Oh, my God.
But we got it out. We're fine now.
God, is it really expensive, right? Is it like, how much is it?
$600.
$600?
They tow it, and you also have to pay a ticket after they tow it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was brutal. But
oh my God.
That's
fun.
As a way to close this out before we go to the Patreon, I just wanted to ask you one more thing. Moving forward, how do you think you're going to, you already kind of touched on it, but how do you think you're going to improve
the sort of lack of, how would you even call it, like enthusiasm?
Yeah, it's like seeing it like a chore.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, I think I'm going to try to just follow the impulse of what feels good, even if that is listening to the same thing on repeat.
Yeah.
And making the same type of song. Like, I won't force myself out of that just because I think I need to do something different. Like, if it feels good, I'm going to try to go with that. But it's also hard to not, like, with making music. But it's also hard because it's very easy to get stuck in the same formula because you think that's what you have to do to make it good.
Yeah.
And so that can be kind of opposite, like, tricky, opposite, you know, goals, where one is to go with what feels good, but if the same thing feels good, then go for it. But also, you don't want to get stuck in doing the same thing because you're scared to do something new.
Yeah.
So it's kind of trickier. You know what I mean?
No, but that's great. That's a very interesting box. I'm excited to see what comes of it.
And thank you.
We'll plug whatever you need at the beginning, but is there anything you want to say now to the folks?
I'm trying to think. Stream my album, Fanfare.
Absolutely.
And go check out the music videos that Dan, check out the Freak Mode music video that Dan is in and try to find him.
Watch Freak Mode as many times as it takes. Send me a screenshot when you find me, because it is actually hard because I'm wearing sunglasses and I shave my mustache.
Yeah.
I really am a different person.
You really, yeah.
Thank you all for watching. We're going to switch to
thank
the Patreon.
Thank you.
So if you join the Patreon, you can see the rest of this where we answer a little, couple of questions.
Where we spill all the secrets.
But if not, thank you for watching.
Thank
Have
you.
Have a good one.
Bye.